A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel, explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Obviously just glad everyone's all right, riders and farmers and police, everyone's come out all right from it.
I believe some of the guys at the back were affected by tear gas and I assume that was from the police trying to get the protesters off the road. This looked pretty aggravated by the time I got there. You kind of go in not really thinking anything of it. Just saw a bit of hay on the road, and then next minute I kind of saw some police that were being quite aggressive.
Everybody had some difficulties breathing, and I didn't have so much trouble with my eyes, so I don't know. I just don't understand some people in the world, and I will never understand them. So
I really didn't probably fathom what could have or may have or what was going on. Obviously the police were pretty quick, and maybe that was why they were so aggressive by the time I got there, that they had obviously seen the situation as being maybe quite volatile, and and we were able to get through, and then we parked up further now. So since then I've done 5 hours of racing, and I don't know what else has happened. So
I just sprayed some water in the eyes, water on the face. Just feel obviously throat and nose was burning, and eyes were burning afterwards. But I think quite a lot of riders were in a similar sort of situation. So I think we're all grateful. We're all grateful for the sort of temporary neutralization and to clear out. I have a couple of Ks just to clear our eyes, nose, and throats out. Thankfully the effects didn't last long. It was just sort of temporarily everything was stinging and burning, but it wore off pretty quickly.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we're in Bagnères de Luchon.
Well, we heard there the voices of Chris Froome, Tom Dumoulin and Matt Heyman at the start of tonight's episode, telling us a little bit about an event that happened early in the stage today when the riders were stopped. There was a protest by farmers. Francois will give us the reason for that, I'm sure, the intricacies behind their protest. But they blocked the road with hay bales. Matt Heyman said, that the riders, when they approached it, didn't know what was going on. They didn't know it was a protest. It could have been anything. And I think there's a real heightened sense of apprehension, anxiety around the tour with some of the terrorist attacks that have happened in France the last few years. And he said, at one point he saw a tractor sort of driving towards him, or what looked like that. It was just a tractor in a field. But and then when they saw some of the protesters being strong-armed by the police by the side of the road, it was a pretty scary moment, I think, for the riders.
Well, yeah, and the police used some kind of agent, whether it was tear gas or pepper spray, to bring the protesters to heel. And, of course, that got into some of the riders' eyes, which is what Chris Froome was talking about. Meant for, an uncomfortable few minutes. The race was stopped for around 20 minutes or so and then neutralised, and they got going again.
So some guys didn't know what happened at all. I mean, Julien Alaphilippe won the stage. I mean, he didn't get any tear gas. He said he didn't know what happened. I talked to Guillaume Martin as well, the young French rider going for the white jersey. He said, he asked us what happened, actually. He thought it was actually straw flying about, that might have caused their breathing problems. And to get to the grips of the story, so apparently it was very, very small group of people, farmers, about 20 of them, living in a very small part near Carcassonne, farmlands called La Piège, which is a bit odd because it means the trap. They were protesting because apparently they're fearing for their future, and they have problems with the European Union. I mean, quite classic farmers' problems, and they were obviously very determined. And the organizers and the police tried to negotiate with them to avoid. Well, they just wanted a little way so that the peloton could go through. They refused that, and that's when the tear gas incident came. And unfortunately, the wind was headwind, so meaning that when they started to spray tear gas on the farmers, with the headwind, it came back on the peloton and on the guys who were there. So that's the.
I mean, there's a a long tradition, a long history of protests, people using the Tour de France to stage a protest. We haven't seen it for a few years, but it used to be pretty common. Did the police overreact today? There were some pretty, you know, some images of some pretty strong treatment.
It's always the same thing. When you look at things from the point of view of the Tour de France and the kind of, you know, big July party with kids and everything, you know, you always have the impression there's an overreaction to the police. But I can tell you that in a normal farmers demonstration with 100 strong guys with their tractors and the police, it's far more violent than what we've seen today.
Tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Okay, Rich. Well, stage 16 from Carcassonne to Luchon, the second longest stage of the tour and the longest with mountains in it, 218 kilometres. And that incident with the farmers came after around 30 kilometres after some pretty hectic racing. And then there was some even more hectic racing afterwards. The brake just wouldn't establish itself. It took 105 kilometres for the brake to go. And when it did go, almost a third of the peloton were in it, 47 riders. The guts of the stage, if you like, were on the two last climbs, the Porte d'Aspe and the Portillon. Philippe Gilbert went over the top of the Porte d'Aspe in the lead on his own. His teammate Julian Alaphilippe, an eventual stage winner, was behind. Gilbert's wheel slipped on a left-hand bend and he lost control of his bike and went over the brick wall and down into the ravine. A very worrying looking incident. Fortunately, he was able to get back up, get on his bike. I saw him at the finish here being helped into the medical cabin just near to the press room here. It remains to be seen whether his injuries will keep him out of tomorrow's stage. But from there, Alaphilippe seized the initiative. There was a strong group behind with the likes of Robert Hesink, Domenico Pozzovivo, Bauke Mollema, Adam Yates, Marc Soler and Gorka Izagirre in it. And with 13 kilometres to go, Adam Yates attacked and left the others behind and built himself a nice little lead. Had a disappointing ride through the Alps, clearly targeting stage wins in the Pyrenees for Mitchelton Scott. He went over the top of the Portillon ahead and then on the descent with around 6.5 kilometres to go, he also slipped on a corner and Alaphilippe went past. And Richard, as you said in our little teaser, the word from our mole at the Quickstep Floors team was that Alaphilippe got on the radio to ask his sports director, Brian Holm, what he should do, whether he should wait for Yates or not. And Brian Holm said, no, press on. And he did, and he won the stage. He gathered more points for the King of the Mountains jersey as well. Gorka Izagirre was second, Adam Yates third, Bauke Mollema fourth. Really very little action in the GC group. They took it easy on the descent. Mikel Landa had a little go towards the top of the Portillon but got nowhere. Other than that, Arnaud Démare had a very tough day. Spent almost all of it on his own, once the climbing began anyway, and finished alone almost 10 minutes after the rider before him. Last man, but he did make the time cut. Three riders did pull out today. Serge Pauwels of Dimension Data, Tim de Klerk of Quickstep and Damien Howson of Mitchelton Scott. Just a little bit of rest day news that we didn't clear up in the press conference yesterday. We know that Andre Greipel will be leaving Lotto Soudal at the end of the season. Adam and Simon Yates have extended their contracts with Mitchelton Scott for another 2 years. And we discussed this issue in the press conference episode yesterday, but perhaps didn't explain too well exactly what Dave Brailsford had said on the rest day. I possibly tore into Brailsford for his choice of words in the Sky press conference yesterday, where he basically was saying that the behaviour of fans is a French cultural thing, which hasn't gone down too well with the French press or with the UCI president, David Le Partillon, who has, he's hit back again, but a very soft volley over the net from Le Partillon this time. As we finish recording the episode, we learned that Philippe Gilbert of Quickstep Floors will not start tomorrow's stage of the Tour de France because of the injuries sustained in his crash.
I believe Dave Brailsford was at one point going to speak after the stage today, but I don't think he did. But television's Daniel Freeb has just arrived. We saw Brailsford heading off on his bike, yeah. So he obviously chose to go for a bike ride instead of speaking to journalists. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, chaps.
How are you?
Fine, what have I missed?
We've just been doing the tale of the tap, so you don't like that bit anyway.
The Brailsford chat, I missed that?
No, we can do that later on if you like. We can return to that. We're talking about the stage, Julian Alaphilippe, the winner. As you said, Lionel, he did ask on the radio whether he should wait for Adam Yates. And there was a moment he told us in his own press conference there where he looked back and Yates was about 100 metres down, and he was obviously thinking about fair play at that point, which reflects very well on him. But absolutely, we've said it so many times, you know, staying upright is part of bike racing, isn't it? And whether it was a mistake or not by Adam Yates, and it was just bad luck.
Even so, to be honest, the way Alaphilippe, you know, went, you know, downhill towards the finish, I think he would have caught Yates anyway. So
he caused the crash by going so fast behind Yates.
Absolutely, I mean, put pressure on him.
If he wanted to be really sportsmanlike, he would have parked up on the top and had a pastis and let Yates win the stage, wouldn't he?
Not sure that's how cycling in the Tour de France works.
That would have
Daniel.
Been a very French. Chivalry, that would have been a very French cultural thing.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. Do we draw the chivalrous line at stopping and letting other guys win?
I think television's Daniel Freeb is used to a television microphone that he doesn't speak. Doesn't have to speak right into it. He's forgotten already, Daniel.
Yeah, you've got new technology here.
So maybe to go back to Alaphilippe's win. I mean, it's we're the French. I mean, we've been how could I say put it? Been kind of insulted in a way by Dave Brailsford. I mean, there's been a little but and also I mean the results of the French riders in this Tour de France have not been great. I mean, Romain Bardet looks. I mean, at the best isolated with very few teammates left. He hasn't been astounding in the Alps. We haven't seen much of him today. Still a very big question mark hanging over him. Wah-wah, was last year's tune. You know, it's more Juju this time around. So Julien Alaphilippe, for the fans this year, he's got a very solid grip on the polka dot jersey, won two stages. So, it's kind of the real consolation for the French. And, I talked to Wilfried Peters, his team director, at the end of the stage.
Well, you spoke to Wilfried Peters and I spoke to Patrick Lefebvre about Julien Alaphilippe. Let's hear first from Wilfried Peters and then quickly from Patrick Lefebvre.
What a day again for Quickstep.
Well, not only that, another victory. We have so bad luck with Gilbert, but it was impressive what Alaphilippe did for today.
Was it planned this morning? I mean, the jersey, I suppose, was planned, but maybe not the stage win.
We're looking for the two. This morning was planned only in big groups. Okay, it was a very fast start. Long time that the breakaway was gone. It's 80 km, full gas, 47 average. On the end, okay, he was in a big group. Some other guys tried to go in the breakaway, and sure, on the last climb, he know very well the descent. Okay, this until that, it's hard to take Yates back, but it was a lot of pressure on Yates. Okay, he make one mistake in the corner.
The polka dot looks not secured, but I mean it looks good now.
No, tomorrow, okay. Tomorrow, every time it's double points on the last stage, on the last mountain. Tomorrow, okay. Normally, you pay back tomorrow in the stage, 65 km is not so long. Okay, we look in the first climb.
Can you tell that Julien Alaphilippe is a great personality, a great character? What's he like? Is he like that all the time? Is he always kind of upbeat?
He's a 26-year-old kid of 16. In his head, he raised like his feeling. The stupid thing should be that we take away his way to be, what we never do, I will never do. And with the years, of course, he received a little bit more experience. He can, because you don't forget, he chased these points against Bargueil, and then he wanted to win as well, because before the tour, he said, I want to win in Mond and here today. And then these riders who were in a break, Pozzovivo, all those guys, were Mollema, Gesink, they were all big riders, and he had to look how long can I let them go?
Well, the two stages that he's won, he's shown a lot of patience, and I've spoken to Brian Holm in the past. He's been a little bit too impatient, perhaps at times. Are those lessons sinking in that he has to be patient?
I think he learned how to win. Yeah, we saw it also in the classics. He really learned how to win. Yeah, definitely.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At RAFA, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 RAFA clubhouses around the world, and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to RAFA, our headline sponsor. And as you heard in that clip, you're invited to ride with RAFA or indeed to watch the Tour de France in any of the RAFA clubhouses throughout the world. I know lots of you are, and we hear stories from you about that. Send us emails, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com, contact us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. There's a very French scene player in front of us, Francois. We've got some bare-chested men playing pétanque.
Yeah, with cochonou. Well, one of them has got a cochonou hat on his skull. So yeah, that looks interesting. It looks almost more interesting than the GC race today. Actually,
one of them looks as though he's taken his endorsement of cochonou a bit too far.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
What's Jimmy Five Bellies in French?
I'm surprised that they're playing such a short end here. I mean, this is tactical ball, I think.
What a constellation of stars we have here. But not only TV's Daniel Freeb, but also Ciro Scogna Emilio.
Are you telling stars, Richard? It's not too little for us. Daniel certainly is a star more than me. But I was thinking, look, we are five all together, more than Beatles. Better than Beatles, in my opinion, listeners.
I tell you what, it's hard holding a microphone for Ciro. My arm is tired now.
But listeners, so yes, I was thinking about a lot of stuff in this tour, but you can imagine my frustrations, my feeling, because what can you mean for me a Tour de France without Vincenzo Nibali, without the shark? I can compare this to a life without beaches, without sun, without sea. This is exactly the same, dear listeners.
Do you have any news for us on Vincenzo Nibali? You must have been in contact with him in the last few days.
Yeah, every day. More than maybe with my family. Certainly Richard is trying to recover. Now I think that his goals are to come back for the Vuelta. Next race, if everything will go smoothly, will be the Vuelta. And I think that he will do the Vuelta with the head in terms of preparation for the Worlds, his main target of this season.
Any that's been reported that his team are considering legal action against ASO, is that happening?
Yeah, I mean, they are thinking about this. For sure, I spoke to the lawyer of Nibali yesterday, and he should meet Nibali in this week, maybe tomorrow or in next days, because they are thinking about to do a legal action with X for what happened. I mean, yes, they are considering these possibilities.
The shark would have liked that descent today into Luchon, wouldn't he?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think that he went away from this tour with the sensation that he could have done something more. I think, it's impossible to say what, but certainly I think that he could have been in the fight for the podium now in this point.
What about Gianni Moscon, Ciro, sent home from the tour on Sunday for throwing an arm at Elie Gerbert? What's been the reaction in Italy?
Well, I mean, it's not the first time that Gianni is in trouble. It's too long to explain all this precedent, Rezza, Wurz, Reichenbach. Maybe we should do a podcast only for this, and this is certainly not possible. For sure, now, he should also could also have been a member of the Italian national team for Innsbruck for the Worlds, and so this is no longer the case. I think that he has to work a lot about his character, about his personality. The main question is now Sky, at the end of the tour, they will decide to fire him or not.
Well, he's on a new long contract, isn't he? He's on a long contract.
Ciro, I heard that he was taking the World Championship in Innsbruck so seriously that he's moved to Innsbruck. Is that true?
Yeah. Maybe not now he's not maybe living here now in Innsbruck, but he's supposed to live there. But apart from this, I would like to say that...
Next year he's moving to Harrogate.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, Innsbruck... what is Innsbruck, dear listeners? And Austria, remember this, is another country as Switzerland without sea. No access, dear listeners. Great Britain, you know, fortunately has a lot of sea, a lot of beaches, but Austria, Switzerland, which are these countries?
Thank you, Ciro. We better let you get on with your work on that note. Speaking of, we're imagining there what Nibali might have done on that descent. Not an awful lot happened among the GC guys today, and a lot of them seem to already have other priorities. I was very surprised to see Robert Hessink riding so hard at the front for the stage when not being up the road in case of, you know, a counterattack from Kruijswijk or Roglic. And also AG2R, Movistar, maybe. What are they doing?
What is Pierre Latour playing at in this tour?
I really don't know. And to be honest, I tried to, you know, talk with the AG2R people about it, and Vincent Lavenu and Julien Jourdi were the one is a manager, the other one is a team director. My impression was we discussed that in the podcast before that in the Alps after the first couple of stages won by Geraint Thomas. I mean, Vincent Lavenu really conceded defeat, saying that the tour was finished, the Team Sky would win it. So my impression is that now they're more going for as I said, I mean, there's only, they've lost lots of teammates. So, what can they do? Can they sacrifice Pierre Latour's chance for the white jersey and even maybe for a stage win for Bardet? My impression is that they've given up on the idea that Bardet can win the tour. And then they're probably settling now for, a stage win by Bardet, the best possible GC standing that might be the top five at best, and then thinking that probably Pierre Latour should, in a way, play his own game and race his own race and try to go for the wild jersey. He's in a good position to do so. And my impression is that, that what we see from Pierre Latour is kind of a demonstration that they've given up on winning the tour.
It just strikes me as strange when they're severely weakened. They've been severely weakened by crashes. How many riders have they got now? Four? Five?
Four.
Yeah. And of all the teams in this tour, they are the team which is most sort of strongly accented towards one single rider and a crusade, really, or a campaign to win the Tour de France. I mean, they put more resources proportionate to their budget into Romain Bardet and the Tour de France than any other team has put into their lead. I mean, they went to Sierra Nevada earlier this year. They took an altitude specialist. They took a nutritionist. They took a coach. They took several riders. So to abandon that whole project halfway through the tour seems strange to me.
Yeah, but in a way, I think the decision was made after the Alps because Bardet didn't do too bad. I mean, he was third in La Bluet, so it's not about a result as such. But look, who's left with him? Oliver Nesson? What is he going to do in the mountains? The only teammate left that can help him in the mountains is Pierre Latour. Today there was nothing to be done. I mean, they knew that the GC that there wouldn't be a GC race tomorrow. It'll be each man for fighting for his own. I don't think Latour can be. Well, there's a debate about that. I mean, will teammates be any use tomorrow in such a small, short stage? We don't know. But my impression is that tomorrow will be really each man for himself. So maybe if Pierre Latour has to help Romain Bardet, at one moment in this race, probably going to be in the last Pyrenees stage.
He strikes me as the kind of guy who probably doesn't love sacrificing himself completely.
I don't think
it's a bit of an attack dog. You see it even when he tries to ride on the front of the peloton. Sometimes he pulls away and he goes too fast, and
it's kind of maverick. I mean, I remember the first time I heard of Pierre Latour was where I was actually traveling to the Vuelta with Vincent Lavenu. We're in the same plane, and he told me about Latour, saying he was 17 at the time, and he told me, well, this guy is really, really a real character. He's got lots of temperament. I mean, he even kind of insulted me because I told him to do this and that, and he said, no, he didn't want to do it. He said, well, of course, he was punished in a way, but, that's the kind of temperaments we need to be a grand, future champion. So maybe they haven't tamed him.
But we see this every year in the Tour when the third week gets underway. Teams are starting to think about Paris and panicking about what they've got to kind of put on the end of term report. And AG2R could win that white jersey. Bardet, best case scenario, third place.
Even that
might be out of the question. And as for Lotto NL Jumbo, I think possibly Hessink getting in that move was a kind of, well, good to have a guy up the road just in case. But of course, the break went out to 8, 9, 10 minutes, whatever, and wasn't going to come back because there was no one had any interest in chasing, at least of all Sky, because obviously if Sky had brought that gap in, then they would have given the opportunity for riders to ping off up the road to their teammates, because Movistar had Soler up there as well, didn't they? So, you know, we saw one of those days where, well, this is how the tour goes, isn't it? We think there's got to be fireworks, but then the dynamics of the stage play out in such a way that really all of the ingredients were there for exactly what we saw today.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25, SISCP25. One of the riders today who looked like he might be riding to a stage one and rescuing his team's Tour de France was Adam Yates, of course. We spoke about him briefly in part one, but I spoke to sports director Matt White at the finish. They're having a disappointing tour after a kind of action-packed Giro, and I think Matt White has been looking wistfully back at the Giro at times at this tour. Matt Heyman as well, when he came across the line, didn't really know what had happened and was very disappointed because he said that that's not what we came for. They really wanted the stage win today. But here's what Matt White had to say about Adam Yates' crash, a near miss at the finish.
Yeah, but it was disappointing, really disappointing for Adam. Disappointing for the team as well. Because, we were after the GC situation we're in, we were chasing stages, and that was a great opportunity. Like I said, hopefully Adam's not hurt, and we've got two more mountain stages to come, because the Tour de France isn't finished. Yep, we're disappointed, but we've got to move on, and the people and teams who can move on quickly, you can't let things get to you. It's obviously, at the moment, yeah, sure, it's a very hard time for the team, and especially for Adam, because he showed he prepared very well for this race and was very close to winning a stage.
So Matt White there, there was a lot of hope around Adam Yates after his brother's performance at the Giro, of course, but he has not ever looked like he might produce something similar. He apparently suffered a lot from the heat. He's had a difficult season, he's had time out with injury and so on, and recovering from a broken collarbone, was it, I think, earlier in the season? I'll check that, but he certainly had some time out, and he came back at the Tour of California and looked competitive, but not as sharp as we've seen him in the past.
Well, he had a very good Dauphiné, didn't he? And as you say, I think we may be sort of slightly deceived by Simon Yates's Giro, and we thought that, we do tend to think of them as carbon copies of each other when they're not, as riders, and we thought that he could come here and really have a shot at the podium. I think he probably would have done under normal circumstances had he not got badly dehydrated in the Alps. I mean, I thought that today, I kind of hate the way sometimes we as well analyse races, and we talk about stages as though they're controlled by, someone standing in a, or someone sitting in a, in some computer tower, and that we say, why have guys not attacked here or there? And, heard this after the first Alpine stage to Le Grand Bornand, why it was non-attacking. Well, 99.9% of the time, it's because no one can attack. However, I did think that Adam Yates probably had it in him to attack a bit earlier today, and 3 kilometres from the top of the climb was not enough with so many guys behind him. There was always going to be someone who was going to stay within 20-30 seconds, and consequently that rider was Alaphilippe, and Alaphilippe was able to put a lot of pressure on him, and that's, I think, what caused him to crash.
The other big story, of course, over the rest day was Dave Brailsford's remarks at the Sky press conference, where he appeared before Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome. We spoke about this a little bit in our press conference episode yesterday, but he succeeded in pretty much insulting the whole country, France. I mean, Francois, how have his comments gone down? I know you're not insulted, but how have his comments gone down here? Or is it a bigger story back in the UK?
I think it's not such a big story at all here. I mean, there was a little bit of it in L'Equipe, but I really didn't see much in the general French press about it. It's part of, you know, before the England France rugby matches, it's part of the game. Well, you know, the match starts before the match, before the game itself, you know, with strong words being, you know, swapped and exchanged. And so I really, there, you know, the little childish game played by David Lapartien and Dave Brailsford, as you said, today seems to have, you know, calmed down a little bit, because David Lapartien issued a kind of, you know, responded pretty lamely to Brailsford's comments, and Dave Brailsford was supposed to be talking at the bus and then just rode away on his bike. So hopefully it's over. As far as I'm concerned, and other French guys in the race, I mean, Nicolas Portal is French, you know, and I don't think he feels insulted by Dave Brailsford. So at best, we the French, when we're taken into these sort of little games, we kind of feel a little bit flattered about it, to be honest.
The other thing is, Dave Brailsford loves France and loves speaking French. I mean, you can tell in press conferences, whenever he's given an invitation to speak French, he absolutely relishes it, and usually gives very long, expansive answers. I saw Marc Madiot this morning, and he had a black eye and a big cut under or on one cheek, and I said to him, have you been sparring with Sir Dave? And he laughed and said, no, he slipped on a carpet. How do you slip on a carpet?
Well, quite easily. It's a slippery carpet.
Slips on the carpets every day.
But how do you give yourself a black eye, slip it in? I mean, that's the kind of thing that people say when, you know, someone's been, I don't know, wow.
You mean so when somebody's been punched and they say, yeah. Oh, yeah, I slipped on the carpet. Yeah. It's fine. It's nothing.
Covering up something. I don't know. Arnaud Démare for being made to stay in the race. I mean, Will Démare survive tomorrow? That's a big question.
Well, I talked to Thierry Bricot, FDJ, Groupama FDJ team director. I was going back from our usual round of the buses after the stage, and they were actually, Démare had not finished. They were still, you know, monitoring his.
Has he finished now?
Yeah. He finished 41 minutes down. He was okay because the time code was 45. So they were still monitoring the race, you know, on their phones and saying, okay, he'll be all right. He had just gone up the Col du Portillon and was going down. It was 50 minutes left, so they thought he would do it. Their big problem is tomorrow. I mean, so I had a little chat with Thierry Bricot about it, and he said, again, tomorrow there won't be any teammates. It won't be like sacrificing for Arnaud Démare and waiting for him, because there'll be no chance to do that. I mean, it starts, you know, from kilometer zero, it goes up, and he said it'll be each man for himself. And the main concern, actually, he said, you never know, he might have the legs. And the main concern of Bricot was saying it's not that a short can be extremely great and exciting. It's not even the storms, if there are storms. The management of the day starts late. It starts late at 3 o'clock after a rest day and the long stage today. How are they going to handle feeding the riders? At what time? When? Do they train in the morning or not? I mean, they seem to be more worried about that sort of management of a stage like this than about the time cut tomorrow.
Well, most people seem to be talking that they'll be treating it like a time trial, so they'll be warming up, going through their time trial protocol. Just to explain what is happening tomorrow for those who aren't familiar with this slightly innovative stage start, it's only 65 kilometers the stage from here, Bagnères de Luchon, to Saint-Lary-Soulan. Three big climbs. It actually, there's no neutralized section. The race starts from kilometer zero, goes straight up the Périssourde. And the communique that we've got here says, at kilometre zero, riders shall be positioned in the same order as the general classification. They shall be distributed into five different groups. The first 20 riders in GC shall be included in the first group in offset rows, with the wearer of the yellow jersey in first place. Riders can then position themselves freely in the other groups corresponding to their places in the GC. So we've got a kind of a grid system. Geraint Thomas will be first. Chris Froome will be, I guess, half a wheel behind him. There's also a warm-up area just near to the start. It's almost a kilometre long.
No one's going to use it. Is it, from what I've heard from direct sportifs, they're all just going to snub it and do their own thing. which is a bit of a shame.
And everybody was saying, I talked to Bauke Mollema this morning among others, and he was saying, and all of them were saying, that the grid system is just a gimmick, you know, to make it look nice, modern, a little bit like Formula One. But they said that he wouldn't change anything in terms of, you know, in 1 kilometer, you know, they said that the race would take its normal course again.
True, but if it was just a 65-kilometer stage with a normal neutralized section, you might see a bit of jostling for position. Sky might want Luke Rowe up there just to ride the first, I don't know, five kilometers or something.
I talked to Luke Rowe as well, who said, how do you see it from our side? You say, I'll see it from the back.
Exactly. So really, the teammates have been eliminated, certainly the ones that are not in the first 20.
But one of the reasons why they've introduced this, or Thierry Gouvenou, the event director of the Tour, says that one of the reasons is that he didn't want, and this has happened in the past, teams or groups of riders can go to the front and effectively stop early attacks. And I don't know. I mean, from front to back tomorrow, it's going to be about 80 metres. It's not an awful lot. Ian Boswell had an interesting idea. He suggested they should reverse the general classification.
Mm. Ah, yeah, so put...
Interesting, but it won't work, would it?
No, it wouldn't.
It's even more pointless.
Well, we'll see, won't we, tomorrow?
I also talked to Nicolas Portal this morning, and he said can you trust a team director, you know, when he's going to be a very tactical stage tomorrow, you know, talking to the press before the stage? I don't know. But Nicolas Portal was saying that what they would be trying to do, Team Sky, is to try to regroup as early as possible to try to control the race. Will it be possible? That's another question.
Well, they might be able to get Bernal and Kwiatkowski and, you know, up to Froome and Thomas.
Meanwhile, Kreuzwijk and Roglic take off in a two-up time trial.
Yeah, who knows?
And Wout Poels, who's, you know, a useful guy here, but a little bit down overall, he has to make a huge effort to get to the front, and then he pays for it. I mean, we're going to be glued to, aren't we?
Hey, don't forget! You can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
A little reminder there that we're releasing Kilometre Zero episodes supported by Hansgrohe every weekday morning. Today's was a day in the Team Sky car with Rod Ellingworth, the Orla Shinui did last week when she was here at the Tour. Really interesting, because Rod's one of the backroom guys who we don't hear a lot from, but he's obviously had a long role with British Cycling, and he set up the academy that produced Geraint Thomas and Mark Cavendish, and a lot of the episode is him looking back on that time. We had a chat with Andy Schleck on Monday, and that's coming out as an extended Friends special immediately after the Tour de France. He you know, we spoke for about 4 hours, so there's a lot of material there, and he was really interesting. Daniel,
I've got to go.
Who's going to win the Tour de France?
Froome. Where are you staying tonight?
Luchon.
What are you eating?
Food.
We're having Vietnamese tonight.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm sick of meat and cheese. I mean, I know. We're in the third week of the tour. It comes with the territory. No?
Well, I think Francois booked us a nice restaurant, haven't you, Francois?
Yeah, it's called Le Caprice de Tigny. It's going to be meat and cheese, I'm afraid.
France. I mean, we're close to Spain, but...
It's a French cultural thing, you know?
Well, last
okay,
night...
Okay, Daniel, see you later.
See you, Daniel. Last night was the second day of the 2 days of Cassoulet. The first night of Cassoulet, I think, just about had the edge. It was a smaller but perhaps slightly tastier version. Last night's was an enormous... It was a 218-kilometer version of Cassoulet.
I was out the back.
You were. I think I probably just about won the Cassoulet last night, but I couldn't finish it. I had to leave maybe a dozen beans and a sort of a quivering flap of duck fat and skin, which I just couldn't get down.
Yeah, so it leads me to the French flavor of the day. I mean, you'll be very disappointed to know, my friends, Lionel and Richard, that Bagnères de Luchon, as the name implies, is famous for water and not for wine or cassoulet or anything. It's a, you know, thermal resort. I mean, there's lots of the hotels, you know, have been built by you know, well, the Brits, as we say here, during the Victorian period. So, well, you know, the Luchon water is quite good. So tonight, if you want to be a little bit more reasonable, as in the past, we could have a little bit of water, and we're going to the place.
I'm trying to give up water.
We're going to the place, to this restaurant called the Caprice d'Etigny, because it's on the Allée d'Etigny, and the interesting thing about Etigny is the name of a guy, obviously, and he's the guy who actually, you know, not built, but ordered for the road going up to Persourde to be built, and most of the mountain passes around, you know, were kind of built and tarmacked, or you know, by orders of Etigny. So we owe the Tour de France owes a lot to this guy, because without him, he was you know, a royal administrator. Without Monsieur d'Etigny, we wouldn't have the mountain passes we have in the Pyrenees.
Looking forward to dinner. And I was also going to mention tomorrow's episode of Kilometre Zero, which is a day that Orla spent with Cedric Vasseur, who's in charge of the Cofidis team. It's his first season in charge of that team, a real French institution. And she spent a fascinating day with him, and that will come out as tomorrow's Kilometre Zero. The following day will be a focus on tomorrow's very innovative stage. We've been speaking to a lot of people, getting views, some very, very, very strongly opposed to tomorrow's stage, some quite in favour of it, some quite open to it. So we'll hear all that, and we'll kind of gauge reaction afterwards as well, and it'll be the story of tomorrow's stage, told in a slightly more extended form than in the regular episode. So all that's to come. Let's pack up and go. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard. And take your mic for tomorrow, because it'll be raining.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Tom Wally.